Brought to you by Elder Advisors Law. For questions about estate planning, asset protection, and more, sign up for an educational workshop at elderadvisorslaw.com. It's always talk show time online. Podcasts of your talk show are available following the show for you to share with friends or catch the segments you miss. Just go to WCLO.com to find the most current show archives from WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
Well, I failed to mention this at the top of the show because usually they're gone by the time we get to the top of the show. But for three of you, there is still a chance to get the Big Radio Fish Fry card, the 50% off deal. You get two fish fry dinners at six different restaurants for $78. I can't do the math, but it's a really good deal. So if you want a fantastic deal on fish fry, two fish fries, so you and a friend, significant other, whether, go to get a fish fry at G5, Judah's, Hat Trick, Newt's, Barn Grill, Moe's, Tazbag, the Overflow Lounge, and the Red Zone. Six different places to get fish fries for two of you. $78. There are three of these deals remaining. WCLO.com/deals. It's good for at least 6 months. I don't know if it says here if this goes out any further than that. Expires 8/28/20. So it's good for a year. So even if you go every other month, you can stretch it out that long. So it's a good deal. So get the final three of them here while they last at WCLO.com/deals. All right, I was very concerned, and our next guest here, can I address whether he was as well? Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive joining us on the Minuteman Press guest line. And when I heard about this four-door Mustang, initially my thought was just, ugh. Tom, but then I looked it up, and, well, maybe. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that we have not fully earned the right to be shocked. We did. Now, you have to be very old to do this, but we did allow Ford to build a four-door Thunderbird for a little while.
Yes. Well, we also allowed Ford to build a Mustang hatchback, if you recall.
I do.
Which was scary.
We do. And then we also allowed, and I don't know why this didn't meet with the same sort of pushback, but it was earlier this century, we allowed Chrysler, then probably Daimler Chrysler, now Stellantis, to build four-door versions of the Dodge Charger. So we get these in dribs and drabs, but the honest truth simply is that people don't buy small two-door vehicles anymore. You really need a four-door if you're going to take any real position in the marketplace. And what Ford is doing here is an interesting analog to something that Chevy's going to do. And it's looking increasingly like, and I don't know how much of this General Motors has fully confirmed, that a vehicle called Camaro is due to show up in showrooms before 2030. And that will be sedan only. Oh. Camaro sedan.
Wow.
Yeah.
The theme today has been things that are passing me by, Tom. Yes. The romance. Well, but although this Mustang supposedly, and I get that at least the information I saw, and it said Ford had not officially confirmed that this was going into production, but experts in the industry are thinking it is. It's not going to be sedan-ish from the standpoint of it's my grandpa's Buick. It's still going to have some power to it.
Yeah, and like we've seen German car makers make what they call coupes out of sedans, and they've been beautiful cars. So you can certainly do that design-wise and just stick two extra doors on a vehicle, but the practicality of it really appeals to a lot of customers. Also, and this is sort of an issue, but the people who buy Mustangs are not getting younger, and they may be going, you know, carrying people around who are never, ever going to squeeze into the back of a two-door Mustang.
Yeah, that's probably true. I find more and more that practicality seems to be gaining and or winning the market share a little bit more than the awe-striking power and looks and some of the other features of what used to be the sports cars of the 80s and 90s.
Yep, increasingly.
Well, we'll see if this comes out. We'll see if this makes it to fruition, and then it will remain to be seen how the public accepts it. But these are the kinds of things that those of us that have been around a while, Tom, look at and go, well, why does the automotive industry and just people's tastes for cars, I guess, seem to be drifting into this non-spectacular sort of mode? Everything on the highway looks a lot the same, unless you're driving a Tesla Cybertruck, which I can't understand why anyone is, but from a look standpoint anyway, but you know, everything's got, and it has for, you know, better than a decade, just kind of this rounded bubble shape, whatever, that people just don't seem to fall in love with their cars anymore, maybe.
No, they don't. And I've long theorized that it's simply more of a hassle now to own a car. Cars are expensive. Maintenance is a little bit more complicated. Taxes are higher and fuel is high. If you remember the mid-70s, and I think we still loved cars in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. even though there was a lot of inflation and gas prices were high, but 400,000 Monte Carlos, Chevy Monte Carlos, these big impractical coupes were sold by Chevy that year. And I think that was just people still enjoying their vehicles. And increasingly, as you pointed out, almost everything is a crossover. What does it say that Jaguar, once the maker of some of the most beautiful cars on earth, only sells a crossover now?
Really? That's the only model they have out?
Yeah,
wow.
And just the one at the moment. They're working on a new car, but it's been slow to reach market. But yeah, the Jaguar showroom is a little empty right now.
Well, and I succumbed to the crossover pressure, but I felt it was a step back up after driving the Chevy van for the years when my kids were little. So going to a crossover there was a step back towards a little more style and functionality. But the idea of, you know, going out and buying that car that, you know, kind of becomes a part of you. I also wonder if it's just not part of the idea that, well, I can then take care of it. And when it needs an oil change, I can do it. And when it needs an air filter, I can do it. And if I need to get at the carburetor, I can get at it. And nowadays, I don't know that your average person anymore, even if you still love cars, can get at that and really have that kind of almost a symbiotic relationship that says, I'll take care of you, car.
Yeah, it's very hard to do stuff, even if you're well-intentioned. And one of the most difficult things to do on a car these days that I think the average owner might think they can do is to replace the headlight bulb. And I have tried this, and it's ridiculously difficult now. Not only that, the bulbs are kind of expensive. You would think that this would be a $2 part, and it would take you like 3 minutes, and then you just wipe off your hands, and you're done. And it is nowhere near that easy.
I can confirm that, and it goes back a ways, Tom, because my wife has a 2012 Chrysler 200. And it needed a light bulb replaced. And I'm like, well, it's a 2012. How hard can that be? I thought I'd go out there with a Phillips screwdriver and, you know, pop the lens cover. No. And I had to actually YouTube it enough to get the guy who gave me the alternative to basically ripping half the entire front of the car off, which was to go in under the wheel well. But even then, it was this is way too much work to replace a light bulb. So, yeah, you no longer have those things that kind of made you feel like, this is mine, and I'm taking care of it, and I'm doing good things with it, which is why I think people are, if they happen to have something that's older, late model, that they are apparently hanging on to them longer now.
Oh, I think they are, and I think familiarity might be part of it, and the fact that people don't want to commit to going with a crossover. But we're also seeing, too, that cars are just so expensive, and that people are, The average car loan length now is almost 70 months, which is a pretty serious commitment. There's really nothing fun about that. Even though you get the new car smell and you go to pick up your car, you have to be dreading what that car costs.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there's a lot of barriers to ownership the way it used to be. And when you walk on the lot and you see a new pickup truck and it's $68,000, that's what I paid for my house. You know, I mean, that doesn't translate well, especially for those of us in the top half of the age tier out here, Tom. But that's not to say that there aren't some things that are going on that might help us out a little bit. There's a better deal right now for certain imports.
Depends on the car. This year, there will not be any spectacular rebates, at least not generally speaking. The supply of vehicles on the ground, which is usually called the day supply, is right under 3 million units, which is actually a little bit low. So it's unlikely we're going to see any big sales happening. The other problem, too, is that Toyota has this huge shortage of RAV4s. The RAV4 is by far the most popular non-pickup truck sold in the U.S., and Toyota just redesigned that vehicle, and it moved some factory allocation around, and they've been unable to deliver enough cars to the U.S., and I just heard an estimate that Toyota is going to be 55,000 units short of meeting U.S. demand this year. So if you're thinking about a RAV4, you're not going to get the color you want, and you're probably going to pay less. And then in sympathy, people are, they're going over to buy the Honda CR-V, which is a great vehicle. And so those are starting to be in short supply.
Well, then what's a person that needs a new car to do, Tom? What is available and selling well in an affordable category? Do those three things even be able to be mentioned in the same sentence anymore?
Yeah, there's a couple of really interesting cars that I like. And it's about a year ago now. My daughter and I went car shopping together for her. And she drove some stuff that made me, just happy that she liked it and saw the appeal. But there's the Chevrolet Trax, for example, which is Chevy's least expensive model. And it's a subcompact crossover that is surprisingly roomy, surprisingly fun to drive. The only problem with that car at all, and I don't think a young person is ever going to care, it's a three-cylinder vehicle. And if you are you or me, I think you're going to pick up on that and maybe be a little bit irritated by the vibration. But there's also the Nissan Versa, which is now the least expensive Nissan product. And it's very much like the Trax. It's a small crossover, very stylish. A lot of tech for the money. Another nice car. And you can do both of these cars comfortably under $35,000.
Hmm. Well, I still have to get my head around that number, Tom. But at least that's in that would be in the affordable range these days for, I guess, as things go. And when you say roomy, are they roomy from a standpoint of, like, tall people have leg room in it, or is it just that you can kind of, have your own space but you still need to be a little more of an average type individual?
No, I'm a big guy. I'm about 6'1". I'm comfortably over 300 pounds, and I fit in both those vehicles very well. And one of the nice things, too, is that the doors on both of those, in this case, open very wide, so the cars are easy to get in and out of. It's funny that one of the positives of moving from small cars to small crossovers is that passenger space is so much more generous in these small crossovers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that would bode well then for families, even as opposed to just someone needing a new vehicle. So nice to know that stuff is out there. I wanted to backtrack just a little bit with this whole idea of the romancing the car thing. One of the things that I recall people talking about when they were talking about buying their first car was, was the model, and whether it was the Ford or the Chevy, and the Chevy haters and the Ford haters and all that sort of stuff that went. But a lot of that was born out of, back in our day, the auto racing industry. And that was the place where they showcased their great prowess in building engines and building cars and building, you know, all the stuff that, yes, you knew you weren't going to get the NASCAR version of whatever when you bought it, but it was a Ford engine, and that thing just won the 500-mile race or whatever. IndyCar may be a little different than that, but it was still big manufacturers with, you know, all the big exotic names. And that kind of was what drove people's preference to model back then. I don't know if that's still the same.
I don't think it is. And you have, you know, big three, well, Detroit three makers now running in NASCAR, for example, with vehicles that don't even actually exist. I think Chevy still runs a version of the Camaro, and they don't currently sell a Camaro. And there's no technology at all exchanged from the track to the showroom anymore. The engines don't do that. The chassis don't do that. And that's kind of why I can't force myself to care about NASCAR, is I would love to see, you know, some technology that applies to both the road and the track, and it doesn't. And it's hard to take a rooting interest in a bunch of stickers that say Chevy when there's nothing else there I recognize.
And I guess the same would go for IndyCar. We had this big race up in Washington, D.C. that they tried to get a lot of people excited about. I don't know how many people actually got excited about it. I didn't watch it. I don't know who did.
Yeah, the Freedom 250 was going to be a big deal. I had a guest on our podcast to talk about that. He was really excited, but he's an IndyCar guy. And the track, I guess, was interesting because it scurried around a lot of 90-degree corners there in D.C. So that could have been interesting. I didn't look either. I didn't watch. I don't know how well photographed that was. But I haven't heard anyone talk about that race at all.
But it just seems like, it seems like, particularly IndyCar, I think, but I'll even put NASCAR then in number two position in this, just to say that the disconnect has grown to the point where now they're spectator sports and people enjoy them, fans of racing, but the connectivity back to the real world of all of us who need a car to get back and forth to work every day has been lost along the way.
Yeah, it has, and I don't know why people would naturally connect with it unless they just like the action. But ultimately, the sponsorships don't matter a lot. Like in any car, the engines are all, what is it, Honda and Chevy, I believe. So that's really weird.
Yeah. Well, it is something I'm trying to adapt to, and yet I realize that maybe I have a few enough years left that I don't have to adapt to it. I can just make it out of here with the way I used to approach things. But the automotive industry has changed so much over the years, and electrics, man, when we first started talking, Tom, they were like new, and everybody was like, oh, I don't know, and whatever. And we've kind of gotten to this point where they're now an accepted vehicle on the road or in your neighbor's garage or your own garage or whatever. But without all the incentives, it seems like we've suddenly hit a plateau as to the growth of that industry. Is it entrenched enough now in society that you think it will always be an option out there? Or will we start to see them fade off again in favor of cheaper gasoline-powered engines?
Yeah, there's a lot of good questions there. One of the things that we need to see is if the next administration will be in greater support of electric vehicles. But through, like, last September, that's when the federal tax incentives on electric vehicles disappeared, and sales fell by about half, which is still a reasonably large number of vehicles. And the market share now is 4 or 5%, something like that. But what's interesting is there are makers still putting cars out there. Toyota, for example, by the end of the year, will have 4 electric vehicles in their lineup. Subaru will have 3. General Motors sells an awful lot of electric Cadillacs. And I think that everything has slowed down. There isn't any purchase incentive. And so part of the problem may be that if you do not own a house, you do not get to enjoy cheap charging, which is one of the great benefits of owning an electric vehicle. But people who own electric vehicles, per many different studies, really like their vehicles. The experience is working out very well for them. And what we're increasingly learning is that people are less worried about range. It seems like the sweet spot now of around 300 miles seems to work for people. And it needs to, because going to 400 miles makes a vehicle much more expensive.
Huh, just that extra 25%.
Yeah, batteries are so pricey.
What is the, you know, now that they've been out a length of time here, what should be the public's expectation of buying one pre-owned?
Here's the good news. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. There's a bunch of leases coming up in the second half of this year. So now, and about 200,000 electric vehicles are going to end up on used car lots before Christmas. And that's going to drive down the price of electric vehicles. So if you're thinking about going electric, and maybe you can use a second or third car that's used, this is a great time to do it. There are a lot of electric vehicles out there right now under $25,000. And it probably works good as like a kid's car, you know, going to practice and stuff like that. So used electric might be the value play this year.
Interesting. You wouldn't have thought that 5 years ago. That's for sure.
No.
As it relates to the used car market, Tom, I wonder, and this is partly a self-serving question for me, but I guess, you know, what should people kind of look for as the sweet spot now? Used to be, you know, if a car had over 100,000 miles on it, you said, well, that's used up. I'm not buying one of those. These days, that's not the case, along with many other things. What's kind of the sweet spot of condition, mileage, whatever, to look at getting a good value in a used vehicle?
That's a really good question, and it seems to be 2 or 3 years old, the value starts to come into play. Interestingly, too, people no longer sweat the rollover of the odometer at 100,000 miles. It's in my lifetime. It used to be that, like, if you had a car with 80,000 miles on it, you had to get rid of it.
Yep. Remember
you
that.
You had to get rid of it and buy another car. And that's not the case at all anymore. But cars do last forever now. And we're learning things that people were once a little bit afraid of, like hybrid cars, which are everywhere now. And almost everything Toyota sells is hybrid. They're super reliable. They have not proven to be a problem. And the batteries never needed to be replaced. So that's really nice, too. So you can shop for a used hybrid. Right now, used hybrids are slightly more expensive because we're dealing with expensive gas.
Yeah.
But if what you find is what you find, and if a vehicle happens to be hybrid, don't worry about it. You know, buy it.
Well, some good thoughts as always. Good talking cars with you, Tom, as always. And if people want more insights from you and your friends over there at Consumer Guide, it's consumerguide.com, right?
That's us.
All right, Tom. Hey, have a good weekend. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right, take care. That's Tom Appel, ConsumerGuide.com, Consumer Guide Automotive. Lots of good insights from Tom, both in person and on his website as well.
Yeah, the podcast is a lot of fun. The newsletter is worth signing up for. He does throwbacks to old ads. It's just very entertaining.
There was an old RV sort of thing in his latest newsletter that it looked sort of like the pickup truck type camper toppers, but it was more elaborate than that. And I sort of remember that vehicle. But
yeah, it's a very early 70s. You can tell by the picture.
Exactly. All right, gang. Well, that's going to have to wrap it up for the week. We'll hope that you get out there, have some fun, and enjoy the weekend activities, whatever those may be. And whenever you're out and about, do what we all hope we do with each other. Try to be nice to each other, okay? Talk to you on Monday.
Standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say you're going the wrong way. You've got to try a little kindness, yes, show a little kindness, just shine your light for everyone to see. Narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded streets. helping hand instead of doubt. And the kindness that you show every day will help someone along their way. Narrow-minded people of the narrow-minded street.